She didn't lie. She was a bitch. I knew her in Philadelphia. She's learned about the truth in the program. Next, we got Mike Dobie.
My name is Mike Devery, and I'm an alcoholic. And sometime over 30 years ago, I arrived at my first AA meeting with a closed mind and without very much enthusiasm. In fact, I never heard of AA. My wife sent me here, and I got to the meeting, and there were 7 people there. And all 7 of them talked. And they all talked about God. And I didn't like that. I thought, I don't need any more of that God stuff. And being a good alcoholic, I figured out that you were all a bunch of phonies. And that after the meeting, the chairman of the membership committee would approach me and he would get my check, and that we would all get aboard the Jesus train and ride off into the land of sobriety. But I was wrong again. It didn't work that way. But the meeting did end, and I had my head down, and I was heading out the door, and I suppose I was going home to tell my wife that I had gone to that AA outfit, and that I was now cured, and that from now on she could speak to me in a civil manner. And I never really intended to come back. I was sick of you. But just as I was going out the door, a young fella stopped me, and he introduced himself. And he's sitting next to me. His name is Bill Marcus. And he became my sponsor. And all he said to me was, after he introduced himself, he said, "You know, I think we got a good thing going here." And now I have to believe he was right, because that was a long time ago. So he became my sponsor, and like everybody else, I jumped into AA to save the whole world. But fortunately, there was an old guy around there. He said he had been sober for 5 years, and I thought he was lying, because I thought nobody's ever going to be sober for 5 years. And I kept asking, you know, "How long do you think I'll stay sober? How many years? How many weeks?" And he said, "Well, I'll tell you. You'll stay sober just as long as you keep the thing simple. But if you're going to confuse it and get in your own way and not let it work, it won't last very long." So he cooled me down real quick. And I suppose the one thing that has always impressed me and still impresses me about the people in AA is that I know of no group of people in the whole world that have suffered the mental anguish that we alcoholics have. And conversely, I know of no happier people or group of people in the whole world who are happier than the recovering alcoholic. And a long time ago, a famous writer wrote this line that to me just beautifully describes the life of the recovering alcoholic, and this is what he said. He said, "Only those who have known the deepest grief can possibly experience the greatest joy." I thank you.
Thank you, Mike. Next, we got a transplant from Ohio, Duke Pettit. Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. I'm an alcoholic, and my name is Duke Paddock. Good many years ago, before the football teams were traveling on airplanes, Newt Rockne used to bring his team out from Notre Dame to play USC, and it was his custom to stop at Winslow or one of those other stops along the Santa Fe in Arizona and called his team out for practice. And they didn't practice the sophisticated plays that they were going to run through the following Saturday. Newt Rockne had these fine varsity athletes, probably the best group of football players in North America that particular time, tackling the dummy, falling on the ball, remembering how to block and pass and kick. In other words, getting back to fundamentals. I was so glad tonight to hear the theme of the last three or four speakers, keep it simple. Ladies and gentlemen, and I use that phrase advisedly because that's what we are. Ladies and gentlemen, and let's not forget it for a moment, that's one of the fundamentals of association with this group of people. There have been times in the past when we may not have been able to be entitled to that term, ladies and gentlemen, but we are now. Let's not forget for a moment that there is one fundamental. I think it's been proved with something over a century of sobriety, or maybe two or three centuries of sobriety on the platform tonight, that there's no compromise with staying away from a drink. There is a clinical psychologist here in Southern California whose name is, and it doesn't matter what his name is, and he's being sponsored by somebody, and it doesn't matter what his sponsor's name is on the radio, but he's going to try to teach alcoholics to drink. I feel sorry for him. The poor guy is going to try to make a living teaching alcoholics to drink. What a waste of time. For this reason only, let me ask anyone in this room this question. Is there a single member of Alcoholics Anonymous in this room tonight that would be interested in being a controlled drinker? Can you imagine anything any more boring than one scotch and soda? If we're going to do some drinking, let's do some drinking. I am the most fortunate fellow in North America. I had my last drink on the 15th of August, 1940. So God's been good to me a day at a time for something over 36 years. The doctor who told me to stay away from a drink wasn't a clinical psychologist with a PhD degree. He was a doctor with an MD degree, but he was also a DD. He was a damn drunk. And his name was Dr. Bob Smith. And if there is a doctor with a whole string of degrees behind his name that can prove to me that he's better qualified to give me advice, better advice than that that was given to me in Akron by Dr. Bob Smith in the summer of 1940, then my hat is off to him. But I don't think that's going to be the case. I'm in a battle, and each one of us is, with a guy that the old WCTU worker used to call John Barleycorn. And believe me, it isn't any Marquis of Queensberry rules with 3-minute rounds and a second to wave a towel in front of you between rounds and an umpire or a referee in the ring to keep the blows up and so on. It's a Pier 6 brawl. But keep this in mind, ladies and gentlemen. John Barleycorn is a panty waste until we take the first punch at him. Thank you, Duke.
I'm reminded of a buddy of mine that came in Chicago, and he went to several meetings, and they're mostly discussion meetings back there. And they go around the table and call on everybody and get to him, and his sponsor would hit him, say, "You pass." Week after week, he sits at that round table, and each time his sponsor says, "You pass." Why? He said, "How can I pass?" Why? He says, "You got nothing to tell these people." He says, "You know all about how to drink. Hell, these people can tell you how to drink. And you get to be sober for a while, and you can tell them how you stayed sober for 2 months, 3 months, whatever it is. But you haven't got anything to say." And I don't think there's anybody can teach us anything about drinking. We know all that. But this program will teach us how not to drink. Now we got a guy that was around at the writing of the book. He's a Brooklynite transplanted to California. They have to all come out here to get their PH, what have you. Charlie Walker.
This is an unexpected thrill in my part and in my heart to see wonderful, beautiful people that I never dreamed I'd live long enough to see them. My name is Charlie Brockwell, and I'm a long-time sober alcoholic. Good evening, my friends, and now the teens and my children. I earned the right to call children because I got a little surprise for you. After 12 o'clock tonight, I will achieve my golden age of 85. Thank you, Mr. Chairman, for a gracious introduction. And I thank all these people that I have a privilege and an honor to associate with tonight. Someone somehow brought me here, the old Charlie. And I thank him from the bottom of my heart for making it possible for me to see such a beautiful, beautiful people that I never dreamed I'd be able to see. I have listened to these wonderful old timers. I still, in spite of my age, I'm young at heart. Look out, gals, I'm available. Tonight I would like to share my experience I lived through. Origination of AA program. I was one of those chosen ones by higher power to achieve my sobriety before AA program. And by the grace of God, I have been sober ever since. The reason I say God, that's a higher power, we put it there. For those skeptics that don't believe in God, I didn't believe in God myself when I first started out, but I've learned different. I'd like to take you back first to my sobriety, which I do not count because I wasn't a member of AA then. I came in sober. And the reason I came in by invitation of Dr. Bob. He wanted to know how in hell did one man sobered up by himself without being hospitalized nor help on the outside. And he invited me later on to join the Alcoholic Foundation movement. That's what it was known from the beginning. Now, alcoholic is okay. A foundation, that's a charitable institution. And movement are co-founders, Bill W. and Dr. Bob. Co-founders, especially Bill W., he gets all the credit for the very first idea that we cherish so much tonight and from now on. Sobriety. A happy sobriety. Not just being just dry. So therefore, my friends, as I stated a little while ago, my sobriety began before I met those wonderful co-founders. I'll take you back to 1933. You know, I was attached to the U.S. Navy at Brooklyn Navy Yard. Incidentally, I'm from Brooklyn, New York, originally. Well, thank you, Brooklynites. Now, I'm a prune picker. I reside in Northern California, north of San Francisco. Coming November, this November 14th, I've been in California 20 years, steady and sober. And as I take you back to 1933, it was customary in those days to have a Christmas cheer just before Christmas. I don't know if they do it nowadays or not, but we did in the olden days. And of course, Charlie took on a little more Christmas cheer, to extent that I don't remember Christmas come and go, I don't remember old year 33 go out, and I don't remember 1934 come in until the 4th of January. I came to finally. And of course on the 5th of January I was called to the office, what we call on a red carpet in those days. A well-known military Navy man, and some of you people remember him, he was a captain at that time of Brooklyn Navy Yard, Captain King. Later on he became Admiral King. He was my boss. As I come in his office, and I noticed his purple face and bleary eyes, bloodshot eyes, you know, I knew there was something wrong there. I must have done something wrong. I don't know anything about it. He pointed his finger at me. He says, Mr. Brockwell, as of this moment, unless you curtail your excessive drinking, I shall be compelled to issue you undesirable discharge and pile on all the dishonor at my disposal. Dismissed. I didn't even give him a chance to say a word. So I turned around and went out. And on the way home, I thought about it, and I said, my God. By that time, I already accumulated 24 years of service. Yes, 24 years I was standing to lose it and be disgraced on top. So what happened is this. Of course, after a while, and I sobered up, I got rid of I was a gin hound and a lover of rum. And some of you people boast about your drinking abilities. Now, I'm not going to say this in the sense of braggadocio, but a spirit of gratitude. My favorite drink was three fingers of gin in a water glass and wash it down with a mug full of hot rum. Now, that's a combination. Those alcoholics like to learn to drink again. Let them try that. Well, I didn't have no one. I didn't have no hospitalization. Matter of fact, I've got received the notice anymore. I come home and I was relieved on 10-day on the beach without pay as a part of my punishment. Yes. So therefore, I made it. But I didn't have nobody to go to. You people get sponsors now. You got literature now. You got books. How easy you people have to obtain the sobriety. And I'll tell you what we forgot our pioneers to provide for you so you can take that literature. We provide a silver tray to serve it to you. You're so reluctant to take that literature. And books. Look at them beautiful books. Well, anyway, after 14 months of sobriety in 1934, that's when my sobriety came in. January 5th, 1934, and thank God I've been sober ever since. But I observed my AA sobriety from the time I joined the alcoholic movement, and that's February 7th, 1936. So you see, I was sober quite a while. But first 14 months of sobriety, I not only received the commendation, but even got a promotion. So I realized that the sobriety does pay dividends. Yes. I had nothing, but I did have a Bible. And out of that Bible, I borrowed words, writings, meanings, and help put in that book. I was a helper to our co-founders. Remember that. Nothing else, nothing else. Just a helper. I helped them from the beginning. And after I joined at 36, Captain King reluctantly or willingly, I don't know, became friends again. In the meantime, they got married, the fiancé. What really happened is this. On a 1933, New Year's Eve, they had a dancers' officers' club, and I was so cockeyed drunk, I was standing against the wall to keep the wall from falling down. And after New Year's announced, you know, why everybody hugging, kissing, Happy New Year, this and that. And we were very close friends, Captain King and his fiancé, myself. And this girl came up toward Charlie, put her arms out to greet him a Happy New Year, you know. And as Charlie looked toward her, what happened? She had a low-cut dress, and Charlie went, right on her breast. And she told me later, she says, that stinking stuff. And she says, I confess, I tell you, I didn't mind it, said, what they did to you. She says, that greasy stuff, she says, I had no girdle on, that greasy stuff went right down the bottom, just sliding. So, Captain King didn't like that. Well, that's why I got in trouble. And under threat, I had to sober up. I had no sponsor. I had nobody to look for help. No, except the Bible. Well, when the Dr. Bob found out that a man in Brooklyn, through Henry P. of Newark, New Jersey, who became later a partner of our co-founder, Bill W., he's a very crackerjack salesman. That man could sell a cake of ice to an Eskimo. Matter of fact, he sold me 4 shares to raise money for this book before we wrote the book. That's how good a salesman he was. Well, to begin with, the origination of AA, here's in line, and thank God for my memory. Bill W. was a head man of New York. Dr. Bob was head man of Akron. Fitz was the head man of Washington, D.C. Henry was the head man of New Jersey. And eventually Clarence Snyder became of Cleveland, Ohio, head man of Cleveland, Ohio. And I was from Brooklyn. I had an honor, and privilege and an honor, to be the sixth member of beginning six before you. And I survived for some unknown reason. I do know the reason. There's a purpose behind it. My job is not finished with many of you people yet. Many, many. You see, what I like to see, not only sober alcoholics, but happy alcoholics, enjoy being sober. That's it. Enjoy being sober. And, you know, as I look at you, your path, or those paths, may cross your own. And they will certainly agree that you're the nicest people this world will ever see. That's some of my little poetry, if you want to say. I'm not a poet. Well, anyway, we started a group in Brooklyn in 1936. Also, six people, five men and one woman by the name of Helen. And when the 4th of July came around, why, Helen, a fellow named Oscar, they decided to go housekeeping. And the day before the 4th, they left, and I presume, I don't know and never found out, they evidently celebrated the get-together and the 4th of July at the same time. We hadn't seen them since. And, by the way, is any Helen on the present? God bless you. My hat off to you, Alanon. You suffered damn sight more than we alcoholics ever could. You cleaned up all the puke after us, and then you puked yourself on top. Well, here's a little for benefit of Alanon. George came home drunk as could be, and he couldn't find his bedroom, so his wife, good wife, helped him to bedroom, got him undressed, tucked him to bed, and everything's okay. Next morning, George got up, cleaned up, and came down the kitchen while the wife preparing breakfast. George looked at her kind of sadly, says, "Gee, honey, I'm awfully sorry I came home so damn late." Besides, he said, "With his damn black eye, too." "That's all right, George," she says. "Sit down and eat your breakfast." George sat down, and she came to him and says, "You know, George, when you came home last night, you didn't have no black eye." In 1937, when Bill W., our co-founders, and Dr. Bob decided to write a book and spread it around, and Dr. Bob asked me if I help. I said yes. In the meantime, I found a derelict that came from New York who was a rewrite man. Now, he's not in the book yet, but it'll come out later. Rewrite man for Fortune magazine. And he came, when I came from Dr. Bob's off a train, my friend met me, and we drove by the Owl's Head Park in Brooklyn, which is well known by Brooklynites, and I saw a man sitting against a tree, a snow falling softly, and I walked up there. First thing I noticed was an empty wine bottle, and he had one of them trench coats on and a slouch hat full over his eyes, and I knew he wasn't dead because he was snoring. So I woke him up. We brought him home. He became my partner. He sobered up. And he wrote a pamphlet, like Jack Alexander's story. He wrote a pamphlet, a fortune story. Get that pamphlet, read. He became my partner. Now, he's not in the book as yet. And thanks to Jack Alexander, he helped Bill Debler, and all that. We had a editorial staff of the cream of the top editorial staff. We had three alcoholics and two non-alcoholics, very brilliant men on editorial staff. Bill Debler was at the head of them, yes. And that's when we started to write the book. Now, from the six, there were 11. From 11, there's 23. That's how, not all in the New York or Brooklyn or New Jersey. And then from, in 1948, we gathered together to select a title for our new book that we were still writing in 1948. There were 48 of us. 38, excuse me. There are 48 at present. And during your meetings over here, you have little squabbles about the finances, you know, and regular meetings, you know, stuff like that. You inherited by rights. It began right there at that meeting. Somebody stood up and say, let's wait to choose a title. What I want to do, I understand Henry corrected the few thousand bucks to pay down on this printing of this book, and let's form, I propose we form a financial committee. I don't trust Bill. Hey, I don't want him to handle the money. We'll never see it. We'll never have a book, and so on and so forth. And from one to another. But Dr. Bob saved the day. He says, hold on, fellas. He stood up. And he says, look, I'll tell you what let's do. Let's turn this $5,200 over to the board of directors. Let them be responsible. Then you will relieve the book off, bill off your nasty hook. And that's what really happens. That's what, and that's why you, you even little groups now squabble over the finances. You inherited rightfully. That's from the beginning. You inherited it. So, how much time have I got? About through, isn't I?
Yeah.
Good. I was hoping you'd say that, you know. You know, if this chairman over here and myself got together a little ahead of time, we might have made it some suggestion. Don't you think if we could, you and I, could have all the money that these people in front of us spend on drinking, we could open our Alcoholic Anonymous Bank. So, my friends, I'm very grateful that good Lord keeps me here. I have a work to do, to help you people in any way I can. And the only thing I can tell you now is how I live. You think about it. I live for today. I dream for tomorrow. But I learned from yesterday. I thank you one and all, and I love you more than you could ever know. Good night.
Thank you, Charlie. Charlie mentioned the fact of how tough it was in those days. But we had some advantage over you new people now. I remember I was treasurer of the Houston group, and we rented a room in the YWCA. We paid $1.50 a week, and we were $27 behind in our rent. That was one of the handicaps we didn't have. We didn't have any money. And another advantage we had, we didn't have any help from the state. You couldn't get on welfare. I never heard of it. Never thought of it. Didn't have any detoxes. We didn't have any material facilities. It wasn't our fault that we didn't. We tried to get them, but the old man upstairs knew better. He didn't let us have them. Thank God that we were able to survive long enough and get strong enough that we can withstand all of this wonderful help you're getting today. Government, get back into the government business and leave us alone.
We're going to have the drawings in an hour. We'll close the meeting. Eddie.
I have missed a couple of people that somehow I didn't get on the list, and I'd like to call them at this time.
Who hasn't been up here? You've been up there. Oh,
George? John, Roy, George.
Yeah, I did. George, will you take it for a minute?
Good evening. I feel like a baby here tonight. I know the time is getting short, but the life in AA has kept us alive. And I think we could stand a few more words from the people that really have worked and tried. I am blind, and I say this because there is a lack of communication, not only amongst people who are drinking and are blind drunk, but people that have been sober a long time and have traumatic experiences such as I had some 9.5 years ago. This communication that I'm talking about is the trouble we have amongst the 13-step work we talked about here tonight. It's like the two men that stood in the curb, three or four men, lack of communication. There's a reason I came into AA at a convention in Brooklyn, New York. I came in and I met Bill Wilson, and he was my sponsor. That was 34 and a half years ago, or a few more months or less. What difference does it make? There was no AA in Connecticut where I lived at that time. I only want to bring out this lack of communication business. When a person says and gets up and says, now that I am sober 7 months, a year, 7 years, 20, or 30, I'm the happiest man alive, I do not believe it. I know I'm glad I'm sober. I know I'm glad that I don't have to resort to escape. I'm glad I had the privilege here of coming here and meeting the beginners. I'm glad that this so-called type of communication in my day was the way it is compared to the way it is now. These four men standing on a corner. Man is blind. Has a seeing eye dog. At least it looked like a seeing eye dog. The fellow next to him says, you mind if I fetch your dog? Will he bite? He says, no. Goes over to pet him and he almost took his hand off. He says, you said your dog didn't bite. He says, that's not my dog. Lack of communications. Let's be sure who we're speaking to. Drew hands me a big book at a convention at Hotel St. George in Brooklyn, New York. Duke remembers it. We know a lot of people together. But in Connecticut, in New England, they never hardly heard of AA. I'm number 158 in that area. And there was no traditions. And suddenly Bill says to me, "You are now the secretary of the Waterbury, Connecticut group."